Good afternoon and welcome on into Kildare Focus. It's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Dennis Nocton. He's an independent TD for Roscommon Galway. Currently, there are almost a quarter of a million people in Ireland suffering with conditions associated with long COVID. And Dennis will be telling us all about that. We'll then be speaking to Conor Horgan. He's a spokesperson for the Irish Business Against Litter. Nace has been awarded the country's cleanest town according to the new survey, and Maynooth has taken second spot along with Kilkenny. Then we'll be speaking to Anita Vick-Gibb. She is with Aim2Kildara. They're launching a new homeless outreach service for homeless people across Kildare. And then finally we'll be speaking to Stephen O'Hare. He's Executive Director of HIV Ireland. Almost 100,000 home SDI kits have been ordered through the HSE's programme, and Stephen will be telling us all about that and how people can use them and get involved if they want to. Of course, if you want to call into the show, it's 045 898 999. If you want to email us, it's studio@kfmradio.com, or you can text or WhatsApp us 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Like I just said there, there is nearly a quarter of a million people in Ireland currently living with conditions associated with long COVID, and 36,000 of these people are impacted on their daily activities by these symptoms. And I'm joined now on the line by Dennis Nocton, independent TD for Roscommon Galway. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Dennis, I know you've done a lot of work over the last couple of years in terms of long COVID. In the constituents that you have, and of course in the wider national community, what symptoms are people seeing mostly?
Well, the main symptoms that people have associated with long COVID are chronic fatigue, you know, to such an extent that some people are physically not able to get out of bed in the morning. Other conditions are associated with heart conditions and breathlessness. And the other major one is brain fog. And that can be something very chronic from the point of view that people, you know, aren't able to concentrate even on a phone call, or something as simple as not being able to remember the PIN number for your pass card. So right across the board, we have a whole range and spectrum of severity in relation to long COVID. The one thing that is distinctive in relation to all of this is, first of all, that it happens at least 3 months after the initial infection with the COVID virus. And this could be someone that, after the initial COVID virus, has made no recovery and is still sick, or someone who has made a full recovery, maybe had a very mild infection and has a subsequent relapse, and that symptoms associated with that then continue for at least 2 months, and that there is no other justifiable reason for that particular condition. So it's a very complex mechanism to try and diagnose long COVID. But based on an opinion poll that I commissioned last November, and if you apply that to the population as a whole, we're looking at 230,000 people across the country who have symptoms associated with long COVID. And nearly 37,000 of those are people who are significantly impacted on their day-to-day activities because of the symptoms of long COVID.
And we talk in terms of care, Dennis, and as we know, the hospitals are overrun. I know here in Kildare, in Nace today, there's 21 people on trolleys. The hospital is restricting visiting hours. They're telling people, you know, not to attend the emergency department unless they absolutely have to, you know, not for non-urgent care. Where do people go if they have long COVID? Like, there's a few specialised clinics, I know, but how many are actually up and running?
There's only one fully functioning operational clinic in the country. The HSE last September, 12 months, realised that there was an emerging issue with long COVID. They committed to establishing 16 clinics across the country for both post-COVID and long COVID conditions. And of those 16 15 clinics that were to be established. The only one that is actually fully staffed at the moment is at St. James's Hospital in Dublin. The one that listeners would probably be going to is the one in Tala, which still has only got about a third of the staff that they need there. And what we need is multidisciplinary teams, because the difficulty is that people with long COVID don't just have one symptom. They can have chronic fatigue along with breathlessness or along with brain fog. In fact, there are over 200 different conditions now associated with long COVID. And what you need is a multidisciplinary team of cardiac specialists, psychologists, neurologists, along with respiratory consultants, along with the associated therapies such as occupational therapy and physiotherapy, so that you can actually review each individual and put a program and strategy in place to deal with their particular issues and hopefully ensure that they can improve in terms of the quality of life and hopefully down the road make a full recovery.
So I suppose people in Kildare, Dennis, might be in a better position if they're suffering from long COVID than perhaps people in your own constituency in Roscommon, Galway, obviously, because they would have a lot further to travel. In terms of then people who do suffer from long COVID and have been diagnosed with it, like, can they go out sick from work if they physically cannot go to work? Like, how does that work?
Well, we have at least 4,000 people in this country at the moment who are on illness benefit being paid by the Department of Social Welfare through illness benefit. And these are people who contracted the SARS virus and COVID and have never recovered following their initial illness. However, what we need to see happen is that long COVID be designated as an occupational illness for frontline workers. And I'm talking about, you know, nursing staff, medical staff, retail staff that worked throughout the pandemic, where they probably picked up the virus. A lot of them picked it up in advance of any vaccination being made available. Some of them are out for over 2 years from their employment. And they are relying now on a means-tested social welfare payment because in this country, not the same as other countries, in this country, they don't recognise long COVID as an occupational illness, whereas it is recognised in many other EU countries and even in the United States.
Okay. I suppose I know you're calling for, you know, a coordinated response from the government to alleviate the pressure because of all the things that are going on and as well of as long COVID. But I suppose, is it realistic, Dennis, given that the hospitals are so overrun just in general?
Look, there's absolutely no doubt about it. The hospitals are overrun at the moment. But if you have people with long COVID and have a chronic flare-up of their illness being added to the existing waiting times and the existing waiting lists, it actually compounds an already dire situation. Now, the HSE, as I say, have committed to be putting specific dedicated clinics in place, which could ensure that these people would not be sick enough that they'll end up in accident and emergency department, will not be adding to the waiting lists inside in doctor's surgery, and will get specific and comprehensive treatment targeted towards their illness. And the only way to do that is to establish these particular clinics and make them operational. The difficulty is it doesn't seem to be a high enough priority within the HSE to deliver on their own commitment in relation to these 16 clinics. And it must be made a priority because it is adding to an already chaotic situation that we're experiencing in our emergency departments and in our elective waiting lists across this country.
Okay, if someone out there is listening, Dennis, and they think they may be suffering from long COVID, can they just attend these long COVID clinics, the ones, say, for example, in Tala, or do they need to see their GP first and be referred?
No, they need to see their GP first and be referred to a long COVID clinic. And they have to be experiencing these symptoms, you know, for in excess of 2 to 3 months before the GP will recognise it as long COVID. But they do need to go to their GP and get a referral on and be checked out at these specialist clinics.
Yeah, I know that we had a woman on a couple of months ago, Dennis, and one of the things that she suffered from after because of long COVID was that her teeth were actually breaking. Like physically, she couldn't even chew anymore. Her teeth were breaking. And like that, you said fatigue and just brain fog like that. What are the other main symptoms other than the brain fog and the fatigue?
Well, look, the brain fog and fatigue, excessive tiredness, are the main symptoms associated with it. Lack of energy. There's a whole broad range of symptoms. It's been nearly impossible to list them all, mm-hmm. and some of them are very specific to individuals. But if people go to the World Health Organization website and put in long COVID, they'll get the whole broad range of illnesses now associated with this condition.
Okay, well, that is Dennis Nocton there, independent TD for Roscommon Galway, telling us about all the people, 230,000 people in Ireland suffering with conditions associated with long COVID. Thank you very much, Dennis, there. And if anyone does want to text in, let me know if you do suffer from long COVID or know someone who does. 0833 97 97 97. And like Dennis said there, you can't go yourself to the long COVID clinic that is operating in Tala. You have to first go to your GP and be diagnosed with long COVID, and then they will refer you on from that. But I would be interested to know if there's anyone out there in Kildare that is suffering from any of those symptoms. 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, I came in this morning to some great news for the county because two towns in Kildare have been awarded the top spot, basically, for the Anti-Litter League. It is the Irish Business Against Litter Awards. So Naas was awarded the top spot among 40 cities and towns. And then in a close second was Maynooth, which is jointly shared by Kilkenny. And I'm joined now on the line by Conor Horgan. He's a spokesperson for the Irish Business Against Litter. Good afternoon, Conor.
Hello, Caoimhe.
Conor, tell us a little bit about what you'd be looking for in this award, and why Naas was the town that was awarded the top spot.
Well, essentially, our programme is very simple, Caoimhe. We commission Antashka to visit towns and cities several times a year and to observe litter levels in that city or town. So it's similar to the Tidy Towns, but different in that we're purely concerned with the amount of litter on the ground. And in the case of Naas, for the past three surveys over the last 2 years, Naas has been cleaner than any other of the 40 areas that we've assessed. So in the case of Naas, we visited 10 sites within the town, and 9 of them were grade A sites. And there was just one grade B site. Grade B would equate to moderately littered. So a pretty blemish-free report, really. And it's just a complete absence of litter throughout the town. So it's a fantastic achievement.
Okay, so nearly a perfect record there in Naas.
Nearly.
You're looking, like you said there, you're just looking at litter. Like, you don't care about window boxes or flowers
No.
that have been planted or anything like that, Conor?
No, that's right. And also our focus is local authorities.
Okay.
So while we recognise the great work of volunteers and how important that is, you know, our job is really to keep local authorities on their toes when it comes to litter. And nor are we quite the beauty parade that the Tidy Towns is. Much of our focus is unfortunately at the bottom of our table, where areas such as, well, this time round, Mahon in Cork, and Cork City Centre and Dundalk fared poorly, and we wanted to highlight that fact and I suppose push the local authority into action to correct that performance.
And I see there was a complete absence of litter on Friary Road car park in Naas. Harbour View was very much deserving of the top litter grade, apparently a notable improvement on recent IBAL surveys. And then similarly in Maynooth, sites of note included the University Campus, Maynooth Seminary, Carton Domain and Main Street, Leinster Street. These were not just good with regard to litter, but were all very well presented and maintained. So Maynooth, if they up their game slightly, they could get top spot next year, Conor.
Yes, they did. And let's not forget, a few years ago, Maynooth was in the second, the bottom half of the league, wasn't attaining these heights. So that's a great story in itself, that a town can transform itself. And I suppose, look, the common link for both of those towns is that they had no bad sites.
Okay.
And our job really with this programme is to rid Ireland of the heavily littered sites, or the litter black spots, as we call them. And, thankfully, there's no evidence of any of them in the two towns we encountered. But if you look towards towns elsewhere, many of them are brought down by the fact that they're generally clean, but there's two or three very bad sites among those surveyed.
And I suppose if we look at Maynooth and Naas in particular, it's not that necessarily people in Naas and Maynooth don't litter. It's that the work done by the community and the community groups such as the Tidy Towns, etc., is so strong. And in fairness to Maynooth, like you said, they have upped their game in the last few years in regards to that.
Yeah, and but there is this sense of a virtuous circle with litter that, you know, if you have a dirty street, people are likely to litter on it. If you have a clean street, people are likely to think twice before littering. Mm-hmm. And especially if that street has been cleaned up by your neighbours or your friends, maybe in Tidy Towns group, you'll think again before you litter. So we'd be hopeful that the progress we're seeing at the moment is sustainable over time. It's not about the local authority throwing loads of money at keeping the place clean. It is a spirit that comes with success and, you know, a desire among everyone in the town to keep the place clean now that it is clean and to wear it as a badge of honour. And I think that's what's happening in Naas. And there's no reason to think that should change.
I wonder, is there any correlation, Conor, between the amount of litter bins in a town and the cleanliness? Because I know in recent months there was a study done in Kildare, and if I remember correctly, Naas was one of the towns with the most bins in the town. So, you know, across all Kildare towns, is that something you look at?
It's a very interesting issue. I think most local authorities would tell you we don't want bins, and that's because people use them for dumping their household rubbish.
Okay.
So you know, we're finding in some cities that whole estates are being deprived of bins because of the practice of people sticking their weekly rubbish in these bins rather than signing up to a waste collection service. So there's two sides to that argument. It would make sense, you would think, to have more bins, but at the same time, there's that other side to the argument. We hear calls as well for more cigarette butt facilities. We don't see many of them. And what are people to do if they've got a cigarette butt? But some people believe that that's only facilitating smoking. So there's some resistance to that. So, look, there's a balance to be found somewhere there, Caoimhe.
Okay. And in terms of chewing gum, then, is that a big problem that, you know, around different towns and cities in Ireland?
It is a problem. And to be honest, like walking the streets of Naas today and obviously being impressed by the lack of litter, you know, there's a lot of evidence of chewing gum litter there. And of course, it's old, it's embedded in the ground, it's very expensive to remove.
Okay.
It's disappointing that we've seen really no momentum behind the move for biodegradable gum.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's been aired for the last 10 or 20 years, but there's really no sign of it. And I don't think there's enough pressure being put on the gum manufacturers to look at their product from an environmental point of view.
Okay, if we look at cleanliness on a national level, then there was an increase overall then, Conor, wasn't there?
Well, there was a fall in litter levels,
okay.
So the cleanliness levels increased, and thankfully we've recovered from the COVID period, which was, you know, very damaging in terms of the cleanliness of our streets. We're back to where we were before COVID, particularly in our towns. The majority of our towns are clean. That's about 75% of them. That was only 51% last year. So we've had a big increase year on year. It's not the same with urban areas. They're more difficult to keep clean. We've seen litter levels fall by 12% year on year in cities. So that's positive. But if you look at our chart, you will see that the majority of urban areas are not clean. And thankfully, there's only one area dubbed seriously littered. That's Mahon in Cork. But nonetheless, generally speaking, city areas are just not clean.
OK, well, that is Conor Horgan, their spokesperson for the Irish Business Against Litter. And thank you very much, Conor, for joining us. Naas has been awarded the country's cleanest town award, and Maynooth there in second place, joint second place with Kilkenny. And just to give you a few more bits of information there, for the third year in succession, Waterford was the cleanest city ahead of Galway. Urban areas improved by 12%, yet they continue to occupy the lower positions in the IBAL rankings. So there you go. Well done to everyone involved in Naas Tidy Towns and all different organisations across Naas, and of course Maynooth there, who have gained a lot of momentum in the last couple of years there, according to Conor. And you never know, they might pip Naas to the top spot next year. So thanks very much to everyone involved. Now I'm joined on the line by Anita Vickgibb, who is launching a new homeless outreach service for homeless people in Kildare. Good afternoon, Anita.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very good, Anita. Anita, you're also Cathaoirleach of Cumann Wolfetone in County Kildare. You count around 50 people amongst your members. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
You've seen some devastating levels of homelessness across the county, Anita.
Yeah, I think, you know, if anyone walked up or down one of our streets, I work in Naas, and, you know, if you walk up or down Naas now, you're seeing homeless people, you know, some of them looking for money or whatever. And maybe that was an aside that we were very familiar with a couple of years ago, certainly in Dublin, you know, or the cities, you would have seen it. But, you know, to see it in our towns now, you know, just really sparked our kind of our compassion for these homeless people, and also that we should, you know, do something like direct action, do something about it. So with the other members of the Cumann, we're going to start an outreach in the Naas area. We're starting tomorrow night outside the Forge Inn in Main Street from about 7:30 onwards. And we hope to provide hot drinks, some food, clothing, blankets, etc., toiletries, you know, things that may be useful for people who are homeless, you know.
Okay, very good. And if you want to tell us briefly what, the day-to-day things that the members in Cumann Wolfetone do, I suppose.
Yeah, well, this idea actually came from down in Limerick, where they've had an outreach going for the last number of months. But some of our other campaigns we've done has been, you know, around the bins up in Donaghadee. There was actually no waste bins up in Donaghadee, and we had a protest and a petition up there, and that's been successful, but we'll probably come back to that another day, that there is now a bin up in the park. We're also involved with the hospital campaign with charges on the car park, and on the 21st of January we also hope to support you know, the staff up at the hospitals there, because up at Naas Hospital especially, because as you know there's just so many dreadful problems in the hospitals, you know.
Yes.
With overcrowding and people waiting so long for appointments, and there's even a fear now that people are going to die, you know.
Great work there that you're doing, Anita. And as well, are you always looking for new members? Can people in the Kildare area get involved?
Yeah, always looking for new members. You know, there's three pillars to our party, you know, social justice, and I'd say this falls into, you know, the social justice pillar of our party, our pro-life beliefs, and also, you know, unity of Ireland. So if people feel that those three pillars fit with their own beliefs, they can contact us by email, to our Facebook page, on Twitter, or also the party head office. But we're looking for people. We're active. We're not sitting around type members, you know, we see a problem and we try to do something about it. And, you know, people need to know that political parties and you know, in general, the public do genuinely care, that we do genuinely care about the homeless and that we're trying to do something about it. Because, you know, a lot of, you know, sometimes when we see someone homeless, like, what's our first reaction? Walk on by. Maybe, you know, might give me money. Most of us don't know what to do. We're placed in a terrible situation, you know, where we want to help and we don't know how. So this is a way that, you know, party members, you know, can help out. And if anyone wants to come along and help us out or get involved in this type of outreach with us here in Naas, because we believe that there's no one else really out on the street. Now, there is some great organisations in Naas, and you might know that there's a special centre now for young homeless people there. But, you know, if anyone would like to get involved, we'd love to hear from them too.
Okay, so you are looking for volunteers then, even for tomorrow?
Sure. Now, we do have, obviously, enough to cover the night. But there's never enough people helping out. There's never enough people interested in this problem. Because, you know, how many of us don't know someone who's not affected by the housing crisis? Every family in Ireland has a son, a daughter, a cousin, an older member of the family who cannot get accommodation. They can't find somewhere to rent. And, unfortunately, some of these people end up homeless. And then, of course, if there's any problems like, you know, addiction or mental health difficulties, you know, the difficulties are multiplied, you know. So everyone, this problem affects everyone. And we're just trying to do our little bit, you know, to help in the community. But everyone's welcome.
If anyone wants to make a donation, like any of the businesses in the town, in terms of maybe, you know, new clothes or hats and scarves and like that, you know, food even, can they do so, Anita?
They do. They can contact us through our Facebook page, or I can give out my phone number, if that's okay.
If you don't mind, go ahead.
Yeah, it's 085-702-8787. So that's 085-702-8787. And anyone who'd like to help out, We love your help, even once off, or if you can commit it to longer, you know, that'd be great.
Okay, well, that is Anita Vic-Gibb there. Ain to Kildare. They're launching a new homeless outreach service for homeless people in Kildare. Thank you very much, Anita. And it'll be starting from tomorrow outside the Forge Inn in Naas. It will be taking place then on the first Tuesday of every month from 7:30, offering hot drinks, containers of food and some warm clothes and toiletries. And of course, last but not least, advice and a compassionate ear for people to talk to. So that is Anita Vic-Gibb there. Thank you very much. And of course, if you want to get involved, you can check them out on Facebook and you can text Anita 085-702-8787. I'm joined now on the line by Stephen O'Hare, Executive Director of HIV Ireland. And almost 100,000 home SDI test kits have been ordered through HSE programmes, and the free tests have led to thousands of positive results being logged outside of traditional clinical settings. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon.
Stephen, I suppose this is a great step forward in terms of SDIs, isn't it?
It is a big step forward, and something that we're really happy and proud to see. A couple of years ago, HIV Ireland introduced self-testing purely for HIV into Ireland, and that was very shortly followed by the HSE's rollout of its own programme. And that programme has extended right across the country over the past 12 to 18 months. And now what we are seeing is a big uptake in the number of people testing for HIV and STIs, and that's a really positive development.
Okay, so if people are listening now and perhaps they've always wanted to go for an STI check or test, and or they feel like they should have or need to, how do they go about ordering these test kits?
Well, it's quite simple. The test kits are available online to order in every county in the 26th, and it is the website is sh24.ie. So that's the name of the service that's being provided. So sh24.ie. People can go on there, put in their details, and they can receive a kit in the post. And basically, they use the kit as instructed, and they send away the various swabs and things that come with the kit for analysis. And they will get their results. And if they need to be linked into care, they will be linked into care by the HSE.
Okay, are these home tests as good as the tests that you would get done in a GP? Are they as accurate?
They are accurate. I mean, I think the HSE is very happy with the accuracy of the tests. So, I mean, again, you know, it's important that people understand that there are several options. I mean, people can go to a GP, people can go to a sexual health clinic and have tests performed there, and those test results sent away and analysed. But these home test kits also provide that comfort that people can take these tests at home. If they follow the instructions closely, they can take these tests at home. And then when they get the results, I mean, you know, for example, in something like a HIV situation where somebody got a reactive result to HIV, you would always be sent for a confirmatory test just to confirm that that is true. Because obviously sometimes there can be issues with tests. So for something like HIV, something that can be as serious as that, people can get it. Will be sent for a confirmatory test. But generally speaking, once people are use the test and get the results back, they'll be linked into care, and then their care provider will be able to instruct them on what treatments and what regimes to follow.
Okay, and what's the most common STI that you see then, Stephen?
Generally speaking, an STI, the most common one is chlamydia, which circulates, which is large circulation in the community. But there are other STIs, and weekly, the Health Protection Surveillance Centre puts out information on the number of STIs circulating in the community. So you do see a large number of cases of chlamydia and herpes, and less so for things like syphilis and HIV and hepatitis. But they are in the community, and it's important that people know that there are STIs that people can acquire through sexual activity. And so, you know, the best way to guard against that is to take precautions, and also to get tested, so people know if they actually have acquired an STI.
Okay, so if someone takes this test and it comes back that they have chlamydia, do they then need to go and follow up and make an appointment with their GP to get their proper medication?
Exactly. They'll be instructed on where to link in by the results. So that is exactly what to do. Exactly. So once they link in with care, the local care, then they'll be able to get a prescription for medication to deal with the particular STI that they have.
I'm sure it's quite popular with the younger cohort as well, Stephen, because I know the colleges around the country. I know when I was in college in the University of Limerick that, you know, it was always around and you'd be encouraged, etc. But many people probably would be reluctant to go to a GP because it can be awkward or could be awkward and they might feel a little bit embarrassed about it.
Exactly, and what we find is that, you know, that certainly when we do outreach or when outreach is done in universities or in colleges or institutes of further education, there is a big uptake among young people, and particularly the student body, for STI tests, and that's really important, particularly after COVID when people weren't on campus. You know, there was a time when there wasn't many people on campus, so it was more difficult to access people. But we do see a big uptake right across the country, and what's really important about SH24 is, you know, yes, people, you know, in maybe smaller locations, maybe in more tight-knit communities, don't want to go to their local GP, don't want to go to the family GP to talk about sexual health. But this gives them an option to get care locally, to get tested locally, or, you know, the comfort of their own home, and then, you know, get the results back and get linked into care that they need. There isn't a sexual health clinic in every community, of course. You know, they're generally, but we're looking at sexual health clinics in the larger urban areas. So this gives an added level of options and added availability for STI testing, and we think that's really positive.
Okay, and is the packaging discreet that it's sent? You know, many people, young people would live at home with their parents, that might be a worry for them.
Exactly, the packaging is discreet. And I think, you know, the other thing people can do is if you didn't want to receive to your home address, you could always nominate a different address, you know, maybe the address of a friend or a confidant, someone who could receive the test for you if that's what you needed to do. So that's possible.
Okay, that is Stephen O'Hare there, Executive Director of HIV Ireland. Almost 100,000 home STI test kits have been ordered through the HSE's programme. And if you do want to order a test for yourself, you can go on to sh24.ie. Thank you very much, Stephen, for joining us there. That's all we have time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow at the same time. And if you are a newly engaged couple, tune in tomorrow because we will be talking all things wedding, how to prepare, what to do if you're newly engaged, all the tips, all those fun things like that. So do stay tuned for tomorrow's show because I'm sure it'll be very, very exciting. Myself, my cousin over the Christmas, she got engaged after 10 years to her boyfriend, Grace Clifford, Kildare Captain, and we were all thrilled. So I'm sure she'll be listening in tomorrow. So do stay tuned tomorrow for that and all the tips on planning a wedding. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.